May the words of my lips and the meditations of our hearts be at all times acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Well, thank you for the kind invitation to be here today. My name's Chris. I am an Anglican priest by trade, but I'm currently, after more than 20 years of professional ministry, I'm on the loose. And I just live in Tuart Hill, so this is actually the shortest drive I've had to church in a while, and it's great to be with you again. I'm talking today, the topic today is a pirate faith. And this is actually based on a paper that was delivered at a symposium, the Vessels Arts and Theology Symposium, sponsored by Charles Sturt University. And there is a published paper, if you've got nothing else to do, by the same title, A Pirate Faith. So I'm going to start off by trying to lay some groundwork about where this concept of the pirate faith begins. And it begins really with the idea that Christianity in the West is declining, and both in numbers and in influence. And when you take into account, that's me, when you take into account the surging numbers in Pentecostalism and in Calvinism, there are, even when that's taken into account, Christianity is in decline. And what we saw through the Royal Commission into Institutional Responses to Child Sexual Abuse has confirmed the toxic culture that exists in churches. And the key question was always, and I think it really was clarified by the Royal Commission, it wasn't why did so many priests become abusers, but why did so many abusers become priests? And the reality was that the institutional church provided a safe, protective environment for abusive people to flourish. The institutional church was and remains a dangerous place, and bad people are drawn to it. And of course, alongside all of that was the marginalisation and disempowerment of women and queer people. And we're now seeing and starting to come to terms and starting to realise the impact of colonisation and the colonial assumptions that undergird much of institutional Christianity. You know, the hand in glove, church has been hand in glove with empire. The oppression is ongoing. Aren't you glad you invited a comedian to talk to you this morning? I think we're at a turning point in Christian history, in the West particularly, but actually globally. We are at a turning point, and when the church has been through periods of turmoil, there's always been an artistic response to that, and that's manifested in a range of ways. Great hymn writing, great visual arts, great performing arts, even Shakespeare is set against the backdrop of that, all those Elizabethan issues around religion. We see religion pop up in every conceivable art form, and I'm always interested in stand-up comedians who talk about religion, some from a place of deep trauma, others from a place of complete ignorance, but it's really common for stand-up comedians. So for me, what I want to talk about today is, given where we are in Western Christianity right now, what is the artistic response to our circumstance? And I'm not sure the entire artistic response, but I'm pretty sure it involves pirates. So that's what I'd like to talk to you about. But I'd like to actually start, and we're going to play that track there. I'm going to start by singing a sea shanty, and you can press play anytime you're ready. I think you'll know the tune. It's going to start any moment now. Now, this is one of the sea shanties. In fact, this is the first ever sea shanty that we wrote as part of Pirate Church, and I'm hoping the music's going to start. Oh, there we go. That looks promising. Oh, there we go. We can probably crank it a little bit. Now, you will know the tune. Now, what we say at Pirate Church is, stand your arses up. So if you're able to stand up and sing along, once the tune starts, you'll get it. It's quite a long kind of overture. And this, as I said, was the first one that we ever wrote, the first sea shanty. And there's nothing more enjoyable than a room full of a comedy audience singing along to this particular sea shanty as part of our show. You ready?
Ain't it great to be a pirate with a cutlass in my hand? Sail and brave across the ocean with this motley pirate band. All me shipmates on this voyage truly love to sail the seas. Yeah.
Is down. We actually have a version of Shine, Jesus, Shine. And people have said the same thing about that. It's called Rage, Captain Rage. Now, it's important to say a quick word about what Pirate Church isn't. Pirate Church isn't a pirate-themed church service. It is not a children's service. And I know that there's like Messy Church and Vacation Bible Schools, and they might do a pirate-themed thing from time to time, but Pirate Church spits on that kind of nonsense. Pirate Church is also not one of these. It's not a church plant. It's not a fresh expression of church. It is not a pirate-themed outreach. It is not an evangelistic enterprise that uses piracy as a gimmick. It's none of those things. Pirate Church is art. Not particularly highbrow art, but art nonetheless. And it's created by two artists. One of them is me, the other one you might know, Wurzel, also known as Paul Montague. And the medium, the art medium that we use, is sketch comedy and immersive theatre. And it's a somewhat collaborative art form as well, as the audience also gets involved. I've been invited here today to talk about the nexus of art and theology, or the arts and theology. So how does this art get made? Pirate Church is kind of specific, really, to two people, me and Paul Wurzel. And he, at the time, until fairly recently, was the minister at Wembley Downs Church of Christ. I was a parish priest up in the hills. But before he was in ministry, Wurzel was the king of Perth comedy, and some of you will remember Wurzel's comedy lounge at the Hyde Park Hotel. And we met in this extraordinary moment where he was a stand-up comedian who was exploring a vocation to ministry, and I was a priest who was exploring a vocation to stand-up comedy. We met backstage at a gig, and we were like, What's this about? After we had lots of long conversations about a vision, you know, this vision, and the phenomenon of Pirate Church was born out of those conversations. Where we ended up with in terms of Pirate Church as a phenomenon was a number of shows that were in two halves. The first half of the show was like a sketch and variety show about the wacky world of religion. So we would usually begin with a song. The usual song, we had a few variations, but the main one we used was called What Shall We Do With a Dead Messiah? And then we would have a game show segment where the audience would compete based on their knowledge of current ludicrous religious news stories. So what was it called? God News Week, that's what we called it. And it was like a heads or tails thing and knockout, and there was always a prize, and the prize was salvation. Which we made the point that it was free, but that was the prize. And then we would do usually two or three sketches. So you may remember the glory days of Australian sketch comedy. They were long over by the time we started. But we introduced, for instance, Margaret and Joyce, who are the vicious matriarchs of the ladies' auxiliary. And they hate everyone, but they hate Muslims most of all. And there was an edge to those characters, let me tell you. Father Hater, a clapped-out and rather rude Catholic priest, Pastor Jaden, who is a little too hip with the kids. And one of our hits, I must say, that we often got requests for this sketch, was a sketch called Hell Song, which is set in a in a mega church, but it's a mega church of Satan. Anyway, so no one is immune from the pirate church treatment. We had the hippie Earth Mother Christians, Margaret and Dennis, who run the Laughing Goanna Retreat Center. There was also the Orthodox brother Georgi, who was a missionary who had come to Australia from, I think he came from Russia, and his mission in Australia was to correct the date of Christmas. And a character that I played was Senator Troy Pendleton Coombs, who's the Minister for Freedom, and he's a Bible-believing Christian politician who sees no conflict in ultranationalism, white supremacy and low-level fascism and being an elected member of Parliament. So he's obviously a very unrealistic character. bears no resemblance to anyone in real life. It was even before Scott Morrison became Prime Minister. It was fascinating. So the first half of the show was sketch comedy and fairly lighthearted, and then the show would take a turn, if possible, an even more absurd turn, and we would engage in a church service or a church liturgy on board a pirate ship. It's a little bit hard to explain this without experiencing it, although you have had a go at singing one of the sea shanties. But we would go, like, you know, Scooby-Doo style, into an alternative universe. If you think of it a little bit like Narnia, it's recognisable, but it's, you know, the rules are different in this universe. And in the alternative pirate universe, the Armada holds sway. And they really have control over everything, over the whole, all of the seafaring folk and all of the people living on shore as well. But for one group, there's a group of rebels. And the group of rebels sail aboard the good ship Fishermen. And they live a life free and wild and somewhat drunken. And these rebels, these pirates, are led by the captain who built and founded the ship, but then was in fact murdered by the Armada and nailed to the mast. But the captain did not stay dead. And he is returning one day. And so they're keeping the ship sailing until the captain returns. Surrounding the ship on every side is the deep. And when we talk about the deep, we're talking about both the ocean and a kind of terrifying yet benevolent force who shapes and guides the lives of the pirate. The deep is a very powerful metaphor, in case you didn't get it. Always accompanying the pirates and the ship on their travels is the ghostly parrot. And she provides a tender, comforting presence, but she also has a tendency to peck out the eyes of people who do the wrong thing. She's unpredictable and rather wild, is the parrot. So when the ship's crew gathers for church, there's a reading from the ship's log, and the ship's log contains the records of stories from the time of the captain and even before. And then one of the ship's crew leads the service, either Reverend Squall, played by me, or Saucy Jim, the ship's mate, read it, and then the other one will expound the log to the gathered throng, a sermon, it's called. And then rum is shared, and everyone receives. We did fly in the face of the liquor licensing laws here, but everyone had a little totty of rum to drink, and everyone shared in the rum. None was left out, and we have a narrative about the bottle of rum that the captain shared the night before he was executed, and miraculously that rum never runs out. So, we've created a bunch of shows around this theme. I'm going to show you some of the show posters. Can you bring up the first lot there? Here we go. Yeah, so Shitstorm, that created a bit of... nobody wanted to put our posters up. Anyway, we won an award for that, best comedy in Fringe World Festival that year. Booty Call, we toured that show nationally, and they were very classic pirate church, like I've described in the two halves. If we go to the next lot there... Yeah, Violent Night and Away Into Danger. They were our Christmas specials. We've done five or six Christmas specials over the years, each with a hilarious pun for the title. And, so Violent Night, Away Into Danger. I think there was Midnight Massacre. That was another one. There were some others, I forget. They all run together. Oh, Wreck the Halls. And we also, at one point, did a couple of shows which were improvised, so a completely different style of show. We developed an improv format set in the fictional St. Bastard's Church. And the premise in one was a Christmas theme, so it was a week in the week before Christmas at St Bastards, and then a week at St Bastards, it was leading up to St Bastards Day, which I'm sure you remember, one of the great highlights of the liturgical calendar. And it was, you know, one of those taking suggestions from the audience idea. We got in some great other improvisers to work with us. So that's the kind of work we did. We toured, we've been to various festivals, National Christian Youth Convention a few times, Melbourne and Sydney Comedy Festivals, Perth Fringe World Festival, all of that sort of thing. We are at Pirate Church unashamedly theologically orthodox. So even while we're making laughs, we're also we work really, really hard to sustain a commitment to Trinitarian theology, a lot of which goes completely over the heads of the audience, but it matters to us. So even when we're writing a log reading or a sermon set in an alternative universe, it has to pass a test against the scriptures and the creeds. And we're faithful to the scriptures as much as possible, sometimes slavishly. So even though we are very much in the world of allegory, it's important that the characters and the narrative are recognisable and that they speak to the scriptural experience. So that's why we're always very clear, have been very clear with this project, that we are creating satire, not mockery. There's lots of people who take the mickey out of religion. That's dime a dozen, thousands of around the world. But we are followers of Christ. So our aim is to provoke laughter, but also a reflection. So we're inside the bosom of the faith, making the jokes, not from outside. So for an example of that, we've got a little clip here, which is a clip of one of the log readings, which you may recognise. There we go, I'm going to press play there. You may recognise the source material.
A reading from the log of the dread ship Fishermen, according to red-handed Luke. The cap'n, haunted by the ghostly parrot, returned from Shipbuilder's Bay, and led by the parrot, rowed a lifeboat to Dead Man's Atoll, a miserable, rocky outcrop set amongst treacherous waters with only seagulls, shipwrecks, and the tormenting whispers of the restless dead for company. It were here that for 40 days he stared down the challenge of the scourge. He ate nothing at all during those days, so when they were over, he were proper famished and stinking ripe as an octopus's armpits. It were by the light of the full moon the scourge arrived, his ghost ship of the damned gliding slightly across the waves, with its ragged sails unmoving in the wind. The scourge stared his cold gaze at the cap'n from his eyeless skull and pointed his fleshless finger in accusation. "If ye truly are the son of the deep," said the scourge, "command this salt water to become rum." "Bugger that," said the captain. "Rum is for sharing, and there's nowt here to share with but your ghoulish arse." Then the scourge scried upon a rock pool in the moonlight and showed the captain in an instant all the might and wealth of the armada and every naval power that sails. "To ye, I will give ye these ships and slaves and all this firepower, for it has been given over to me, and I give it to any ones I please. If ye then will worship me, ye will rule the seas." The captain spat. "The deep cannot be ruled. It makes drowned men of the proud and driftwood of their ships, you dickhead." Then the scourge took him to a raging whirlpool, where the water had such terrible power to pull down the stoutest ship or mightiest whale to the abyss. "If ye are the son of the deep, take a paddle in this here maelstrom, for the old songs say the deep sends mermaids to the chosen, and on their salty bosoms they will bury ye and kiss sweet air into your lungs." The captain laughed. Now that's just bloody stupid. You know so much about the deep, why don't you dive in and show me how it's done? And with that, the captain kicked the Scourge off the rocks into the raging whirlpool. Curse ye, screamed the Scourge. I'll be back for ye. Aye, said the captain, join the bloody queue. That be your story, as you were written.
Close enough for me.
The way I see the world, artists create art which tries to integrate the world that they inhabit, the context that we're in, our own experience of the world, our own particular creative gifts and skills, and the perceived or real needs of an audience. So all of these things are happening in conversation with one another. And so to me, at least, and I think to really, the world of art recognises that art ought to be provocative and transgressive, and that the best art does that. It actually prods you. It actually pushes you into a different place. There's, of course, a place for beautiful landscapes and for pleasant, you know, feel-good music or whatever, but really great art, in my view, forces you to reconsider the world around you. So great art is both beautiful and uncomfortable. And so for 6 years of the Pirate Church project, my work as an artist was affirmed by my peers in ministry. So lots of my ministry colleagues, people from churches, bishops, whatever. We went to, you know, national church conferences and things. We were affirmed by our peers, and we were nominated for awards both here and in Melbourne, and won awards, and were interviewed in the media, and there was quite a lot of positivity. Like, there was a lot of good feedback. And from my own institutional church that I was part of, never any concerns. In fact, you know, there was a lot of kind of, you know, a bit of, like, it's a bit naughty. But it was, my experience was that people were kind of sort of enjoyed it in some perverse way. And so I guess I should have seen the Armada on the horizon, but I didn't. I never saw it, literally never saw it coming. And yeah, I just didn't. And so it all began. We had been at the National Christian Youth Convention in Stanwell Tops near Sydney, and we just had a whole week. We'd done a couple of Pirate Church shows and run workshops and done talks, and it was great. We had this great time, and there was a kid there, Jack Vigen was there. He'd been on Australian Idol, and we're like, cool, we're on the same stage as the Australian Idol kid. So it was like we're having this moment. And then out of the blue, I got this email. I was in Sydney visiting my family, and it was from the Professional Standards Unit of the Diocese of Perth. And it later transpired what had happened. I have my suspicions, but what had happened is that the Director of Professional Standards had personally made a complaint about me to herself. Right, so she had made the complaint, received the complaint, and then taken the complaint to the Professional Standards Committee, who had gone, oh yes, this is a very big problem indeed. And the most of the complaint was about Pirate Church and why it was a terrible, terrible thing. The long story short, I was suspended from ministry in the end for 6 months. We then got a new archbishop, and the day she started as archbishop, I got a phone call and very soon found myself back in ministry. So I'll let you join the dots on that. And but I did have to go away to on retreat for a month in Ballarat. Weirdly, we call it Jesus Jail. My friends are like, remember when they sent you to Jesus Jail? Yes, I do remember. I was there. And so I was suspended for a period, a month in Jesus Jail, then back to work. And then as the church does so well, we pretended that nothing ever happened. We must never talk about it again. But I thought you might like to read some of the things that the Director of Professional Standards wrote to me about Pirate Church. So your participation in Pirate Church has drawn criticism from whom is unclear, but in particular the context of you wearing a clerical collar during performances, such performances may give rise in the minds of some to a confusion between you being a mere performer on the one hand and being a representative of the church on the other. Would you please explain how you mitigate the risk of any such confusion arising? First of all, this was in writing, a mere performer, excuse me. was Shakespeare a mere performer? Like, is that where we're going with it? And so this was part of the, like, oh, what if somebody was to wander in off the street and think they were really at church and you were representing the... Because clearly people are so dumb, you know, so clueless that would arise for them. And how would I mitigate that risk? Because, of course, you know, this insurance company speak... if we have a look at the next one, I think this one... Oh, yeah. Further, it is noted, you advertised the following performances, and they listed them. And I was like, well, there was more than that. So I actually sent... Because, you know, I am a bit of a... I do like to poke the bear. So when I wrote my written response back to these accusations, I said, you know, I note that there are some errors, that you've excluded some, and I'd like you to... And I included copies of all the posters and scripts and excerpts, just to give them something to read. You know how it goes. And then this one was my particular favourite, I think, the next one. There is a risk of perception that such titles identify a reverence, blah, blah, blah. In particular, the reference to Saint Bastards has the potential to cause distress to children who were born illegitimately. And as I wrote back to them, I said, calling children, saying that any child is born illegitimately is actually deeply offensive to all the bastards out there. And what an absolutely clueless thing to say. And then this argument that by using the word bastard on a poster, I would be offending people who are survivors of child abuse. That I was doing that. This was happening at the exact time that my own Archbishop had been stood down for covering up allegations of child abuse and was ultimately deposed from holy orders. He's no longer a bishop or a priest because of that cover-up, but I was the problem. It's almost as though the institution was transferring one problem onto me and making me a scapegoat. Anyway, look, that would never happen. I'm just being purely theoretical there. So thank you. Good. So... art was made, the art was shared, the art was either enjoyed or ignored, as the case may be, but then life imitated art. When instead of saying, oh, what an interesting or exciting opportunity, or even, hey, wouldn't it be nice to have a conversation about this or have a chat? No. Let's go down this formal complaints path. And it was, as so often happens, the arts were attacked for daring to transgress boundaries, and particularly at a time of tension and a time of uncertainty and change in the broader life of the institutional church in the West. Looking back at it now, that was more than 5 years ago, I can see in the great sweep of things why it happened and what was really going on. But at the time, of course, it was deeply stressful. But for me, and I guess this is the good news bit of the story, is that for me it only enhanced my pirate faith, and it only emboldened others with a pirate faith, a faith that believes in a God who is wild, a God who is untamable, a God who calls people to live lives full of hope and free from fear. And so the pirate faith only blossomed as a result of that attack. We've done a few more shows, a bit more work. I think it's all a bit in hiatus at the moment. We may come back. But the thing is that faith, for us anyway, in Pirate Church, faith is for pirates. Faith should never be owned by the armada. Faith is for those of us who dare to make a life that's an adventurous life, a risky life, a life out on the wilds of the ocean, not a life that is built around power and dominance and oppression and control. So as you consider the impact of the arts on your faith and on your life, I'll invite you to a life of high risk, and I'll invite you to never mitigate that risk. And instead lean into the risky life that God calls each one of us to. Thank you.
Happy to stay there.
Yeah. Shall I get a seat?
Yeah. Chris, have you ever been accused of being a genius?
Really, no. I like to make the point that I'm actually a tradesman. Like, I see my work in ministry as my dad's a tradesman, so I see that work as very much... I appreciate the work of scholars, but I'm a worker bee. And for me, say, Pirate Church and the various other, you know, some of you will know the other work that I've been involved with over the years. It's about, like, picking up tools and getting to work rather than simply sort of discussing or talking or raising awareness. So, no, I haven't been accused of being a genius, and I'm not sure I would want to be.
Maybe I mean different things by it, because you've just further cemented my opinion that some geniuses take up the tools and become tradies and some go to university lead that kind of life. But I'm just struck by the commitment to artistic endeavour and rigorous orthodoxy and faith and bringing them together in a way that you absolutely hold on to, and that you were talking about speaking satire into the church from within the church. I mean, that's just wonderful.
Thank you. And I think the really important thing for both of us in the endeavour that has been Pirate Church is that we're the same person, whether we're preaching in our church or, you know, getting arrested in an action to support refugees or standing up for other forms of human rights or making art. We maintain our own integrity in that. It is very difficult, though, in all of those settings, for people to sometimes see the integrity of the other context. And some of you will know that, you know, when you say, oh, I'm part of a church, or I go to church, or you mention your church, people go, whoa, I thought you were a really nice person. And what, well, you've been concealing this from me. And if for people who are in ministry, it's doubly so because of the shift in perception. And so that, for, you know, largely, I think, for the good, you know, being backstage in comedy rooms and festivals and many, many other settings. I've been to places that the typical sort of parish vicar doesn't go to, and I'm really glad to have done that. But gosh, there's some resistance to that in the institutional church, big time. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. I found that very profound. But I'm sorry that I missed it all. I have never heard of the Pirate Church apart from people in this congregation mentioning it. I'd have loved to have gone along to listen to one of your shows. What's the future for it? Are you going to do it again?
Can I tell you a sad story? In the year 2020, there was a crew from the ABC who were getting on a plane to come to Perth to film a show, and then they were going to go with us to Brisbane, where we were going to perform another show, and they were going to film that. That show was going to be like a fringe festival to the General Synod of the Anglican Church of Australia. And so we're going to do like a show at the national event. And the reason we're going to do that is because, I don't know if you've heard, but the Anglican Church of Australia is basically crumbling to pieces. So we're going to have a funeral for the Anglican Church of Australia and invite everyone to a pirate funeral. It was going to be amazing. And literally the day that they were about to get on a plane was the first day of the lockdown. And so then life, you know, has intervened, and the special, there was going to be a special on the ABC. And so I must say that broke our hearts a little bit, because that was going to be our platform to, you know, to grow and do something fresh and new. You know, anything is possible. So we haven't abandoned it yet, but we are in a bit of a hiatus. Oh, yeah. Oh, you'll hear about it. Don't you worry. Yeah.
You just said that it was almost a throwaway remark, but you said that you tell people you go to church and they said, oh, I thought you were a nice person.
Yeah.
My experience, I've been thinking a lot about this, and my experience is that if you say you go to church, that's a turn-off. Mm-hmm. If you start talking about your walk with God, people pay attention and they want to know more. And the big mistake we're making is thinking that forgive the word evangelism, but the big mistake we're doing is that it's about getting people into church. Mm. And it's not. It's getting people into a relationship with God.
Yeah, look, I would endorse that. And thinking about, there was a period where I was gigging quite regularly as a stand-up comedian, just doing sets, you know, in various comedy rooms around Perth, and the green room is a sacred space, and partly because you spend a lot of time in there. You get up and do 10 minutes of material, but you might be in there for an hour and a half before, an hour and a half after. A lot of intense conversations happen there, and And in that time, both for me and for Wurzel over a much longer career, the kind of pastoral, spiritual life, you know, assessment conversations that happened there were very profound, and many, many comedians are acting shocking, acting from a place of trauma. Like, so their comedy is often coming from a place of trauma. And so sort of processing that in a safe environment and addressing who God might be and all that, very, very powerful. And just such a reminder that... I used to go, no, I'm actually still a priest here as much as I am in the parish, you know. And some of my colleagues, and I'd say this to their face, just speaking out of turn, but I often say to my colleagues, look, you need to get out of this. Go and learn to dance or do a woodwork class or play football or something. Get out of this. And for that exact reason, not just this should apply to all of us, that we need to actually spend our time amongst what I might call normal people, and hear their story and be able to share ours, not just be enmeshed in churchy stuff.
I found myself driving home from work sometimes and listening. I didn't listen to Jeff Hutcherson on the ABC a lot, but I made sure I tuned in, I think it was a Monday, because I'd hear you and Wurzel, the Holy Heretics, and I would go back and listen to the ABC online and find them, skip through and find them and listen to them. And so I'm hoping that there's an avenue for you to do something like that again, because I happened across it by accident and then waited for it every week. So I don't know if you're still doing anything like that.
Yeah, so Jeff Hutcherson, as you know, has left ABC Drive, and he'll be back in some other form eventually somewhere. Holy Heretics was, in fact, the highest rated segment on ABC 720 for the whole year, routinely were the most popular. And we never got paid a cent for it, which is okay, because you know, we never started doing it with a commercial sense. We're in talks to revisit what the new form of Holy Heretics might look like. So watch this space. Yeah.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I would say, Chris, view us as a fan base and a prayer and support base for your vocation.